Good morning, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody. For those who are new to the name and the experience, we've been talking to people involved in the arts, music, culture, and humanities, and we've carried on those conversations with the famous, the not-so-famous, and soon-to-be-famous on Friday afternoons. But now we're going to be here on Thursday mornings, the brunch crowd, the There's Nothing Good on TV Anyway crew. We're very happy to be here. You should know that our inaugural show today has a special surprise that up until yesterday even I didn't know what happened, but let me first give you today's scheduled lineup. It's a good one. As recently as a month ago, Mike Malone was a music student at UW-Eau Claire. Now he's on the road as the drummer in the touring Glenn Miller Orchestra. We caught up with him during a break on tour. Contributor Jim Oliver is here with Glenn St. Arnold, Mr. Baseball. In this neck of the woods, they will talk about the book Glenn always threatened to write. It's called Play Ball. Jim also has a compendium of what's on stage at Western Wisconsin. And we'll share a conversation we had with Rusty Volk, director of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair, currently up and running in Chippewa Falls. Now, there's a lot of entertainment at this year's fair. We'll tell you about it coming up. But Saturday night, in front of the grandstand, and this is the surprise I was talking about, I believe you might just hear some of this. Well, this is cool. We usually are pretty structured in our schedules here at WPR, but every once in a while, we are able to toss in a surprise. And this is definitely one of those times. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to Don Brewer, infamous legendary drummer, the infamous legendary Grand Funk Railroad. Don, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Alan. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Does it bother you that we, after a while, just never got to the word railroad?
It's either or. It doesn't really make a difference. You know, I mean, it's kind of like the formal name. Like you, Alan or Al, it's Grand Funk and Grand Funk Railroad. I prefer Grand Funk myself. I just think it has a kind of feel to it.
Yeah, it sure does. And you know what? It's interesting that you're finally on Wisconsin Public Radio, because I'll bet that back when your hits were hits, you weren't on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Probably not.
You know, hey, I was looking up some stuff on Flint, Michigan. Bob Eubanks is from Flint, Michigan. Did you know that?
Yeah, I do remember hearing that. Also, the girl, Florence Henderson, is from Flint, Michigan.
Oh, cool.
You know that? Yeah.
Bob Eubanks was the dating game guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the dating game. Florence Henderson was on something
she,
family.
She was on the Brady Bunch.
The Brady Bunch, that was it.
And Michael Moore, does he call it home, too?
Michael Moore is originally from Flint. He actually started out doing, you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, he was running a radical newspaper in Flint,
figure.
Michigan, you know.
Yeah, the original Bozo the Clown was from Flint as well.
I did not know that.
Guy by the name of Bob Bell. And, of course, question mark in the Mysterians. And I guess you have a member, which is now a quintet, who was in that band.
Yeah, Mel Shocker. You know, he wasn't the original bass player for question mark, but he was, you know, he was one of the guys that came along later. And we stole him from question mark, you know, to start Grand Funk.
Well, let's go back. Since we're talking about Flint, let's go back to Flint, Michigan, mid to late 60s. I read about WTAC, the influential top 40 station there.
Mm-hmm. Bob 60. Dell, you know, Bob Dell at WTAC. He was
cool.
He was a big supporter. You know?
You listen to it all the time, AM.
Yeah.
Cool. The Red Devils.
The Red Devils, that's where I started. That was the very first band I ever had in elementary school, actually. We were playing for a, you know, one of those lunchtime talent shows, you know, where you were competing.
I know it well. And then you named yourself after a guitar, the Jazz Masters.
The Jazz Masters, yeah, that's right. You know, and you kind of had a little flair to it. You know, I don't really, it wasn't really representative of the kind of music we played. And, yeah, and then that band became The Pack, and Terry Knight in The Pack. And then that band, you know, different people that came and went in that band became Grand Funk Railroad.
Yeah, and that was in 69. Did Grand Funk just happen, or was the whole thing kind of calculated?
We were actually in the transition of going from being The Pack to something new, and we didn't exactly know what that something new was. We were, you know, broke and penniless, and we got to try something new. So Mark and I, you know, decided to, Mark Farner and I decided to try the trio thing, you know, because Hendrix was, it was happening at the time, Cream and Blue Cheer and all these bands. blues-based bands, you know, and we were more of an R&B band in the pack. And we just kind of, you know, we got Mel Shocker from Question Mark and the Mysterians, and we decided we were going to put this trio together and use our R&B, but crank it up like Hendrix was, you know, and do it, you know, very rock and roll style. You know, that was a calculation, sure. We needed to do something to get noticed and to get gigs, and so sure. We did that. And then we enlisted Terry Knight. Terry Knight had moved off to New York. He was one of our former singers, and he moved off to New York. And he actually came up with the name Grand Funk Railroad, named after Grand Trunk and Western Railroad, which ran through Flint, Michigan. So, you know, that's really kind of how the whole thing, was it calculated? Yeah, I mean, we definitely were trying. Yeah. We were trying to do something.
Well, you succeeded. You know, and when you put a band together like that, what was on the playlist at the beginning?
Well, we were doing a lot of stuff in the pack that, some original stuff that Mark Farner had written and other stuff that we were doing that was covers, that we were radically changing, sort of along the lines of Vanilla Fudge, you know, how they would take the Motown classics and stuff, and they would put a whole new twist on them. Well, we did the Inside Looking Out, which was the Eric Burdon and the Animals, but we did a completely different rendition of that, and we did several other songs like that. We would take one called The Lion Sleeps Tonight. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Totally, different groove, different feel. We were experimenting with different styles of music and trying to create our own stuff, you know, as we did later, with a lot of other stuff like Locomotion and, Some Kind of Wonderful, you know, we just kind of took other songs and turned them into something that was us.
Gave me a flashback when you brought up Vanilla Fudge. Their version of Keep Me Hanging On was my favorite.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I love that whole album, that Vanilla Fudge album that was had all that stuff. It was terrific.
Don Brewer, drummer, Grand Funk is with us here on Spectrum West. I was looking at some old YouTube videos. And I saw Some Kind of Wonderful when you did it. I'm trying to get at the varied approach that you had to music, because in Some Kind of Wonderful, you guys went, and I timed it, 2 minutes and 20 seconds with just a bass and drums. but the vocals were taking care of the rest. You had some nice harmonies there. And then we switch over to, like, I'm Your Captain, Closer to Home. That was the whole shebang. You had an orchestra in the background.
Yeah. We did that with an orchestra. With Paul Schaefer, actually, was conducting one of the orchestras we did. But yeah, you know, just a whole gamut of stuff, you know. And actually, the way we got to doing Some Kind of Wonderful in the first place is we were doing an a cappella version of that song just for fun in the car. Our manager said, "Why don't you guys record that thing?" You know, because it was just, you know, it was just totally a cappella. I don't need a whole lot of money. I don't need a big fine car. The song can be done without anything. So that's the cool thing about it.
So the arrangements sort of just developed in the studio as you went?
We were really kind of going back. The original was done by the Soul Brothers Six. We kind of went back and tried to grab that feel. That it was a very gospel kind of a feel that they had. Yeah. And that's all they had. It was just bass and drums and vocals. And actually, I think they had a little guitar going, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We left the guitar out. It was very cool.
I caught another YouTube video of you guys. I think it was, it said 73, I believe, were an American band.
Yeah.
You know, there's been lots of jokes made about the cowbell. And you kind of go nuts with the cowbell on that song, which is
And every great rock song needs a cowbell. You know?
Well, if not that, at least more cowbell.
More cowbell, absolutely.
Yeah. And you had the afro going. You were shirtless. What a great look that was.
I wouldn't want to go shirtless these days.
All right. Well, since we've made that segue, tell me, what's the biggest difference between Don Brewer 73 and Don Brewer 2013?
Oh, a lot of gray hair.
Yeah, I've seen that. But you know what? It's very stately looking.
Yeah, it is.
You've got a mane.
A lot of gray hair. But I wouldn't say they're two different guys. They're the same guy. But obviously, you know, as you get older, you learn a lot of stuff. You know, so I certainly wouldn't do many of the things that I did when I was the young Don Brewer these days. But I still, you know, I get on stage and I really have a good time entertaining people. I love seeing people, and especially kids and parents and grandparents, all knowing the words to the song Some Kind of Wonderful, and I'm Your Captain, Closer to Home, an American band. And you see that you've had this great effect on generations now. I never dreamed that we would hear. We're coming up on 45 years.
No kidding.
I never dreamed that we would have this kind of a career.
You know? That's pretty cool. I can always see how a vocal solo artist continues to perform into their 60s and 70s, and even beyond, like Tony Bennett. But I was wondering, you know, what's it like for guys who have to play and sing and move, you know, to keep doing it.
It takes work. Before I called you, I was out on a walk. I walk probably about 4 miles a day, plus I go to the gym every day. I work at it. I know that if I stop, I'm going to stop, you know, so I have to keep going. And what I do is very physical, between the singing and the playing and the schedule as far as traveling, too. It's very hectic, you know, but I love doing it, and I've got a great family, and everybody's very understanding, and great guys in the band, so it's just always something to keep going forward with, you know, and that's one of those kind of things.
Translation, life is good?
Life is good. It is.
Attaboy. Yeah. Do you do new stuff? Anybody in the band writing new stuff?
We do. Max Carl, who's our singer, has written a couple of things. And over the years, we've got, you know, I would say, you know, probably 10 or 11 different new things. Eventually, maybe they'll all make it out on a live record or something. But we do some new stuff in the show. We open the show with a new song called Bottle Rocket. Another one a little later in the show called Sky High. Another one that is all percussion called Lightning and Thunder. So, yeah, we still, you know, and we still enjoy trying stuff out on people, you know. We know that they want to hear the hits, and we really focus on giving people the hits in our show. Mm-hmm. But we still like to, you know, screw around and have fun with some new stuff, too.
Good. Well, you're coming to the Northern Wisconsin State Fair, and I got to tell you that the grandstand at that place, they're a rowdy crowd.
Oh, terrific. We're looking forward to it.
Don Brewer, thanks for hanging around. Keep doing what you're doing, and you keep us all young, believe me.
All right. Thanks, Al. I really appreciate it.
Everybody, listen to me and return me.
Grand Funk, Don Brewer, 8 o'clock Saturday night, Northern Wisconsin State Fair, Chippewa Falls. We will go behind the scenes of the fair with director Rusty Volk a little later on. Right now, though, let's remind you that support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Festival Foods, dedicated to making grocery shopping easier for all shoppers with the introduction of pink, yellow, and green boomerang buy tags throughout the store. Festival Foods, a Wisconsin-grown company.
Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery in a local and fair trade gallery. Details at simply-dunn.com.
Support also comes from Visit Winona, home of the Minnesota Beethoven Festival, this year featuring 9 different performances from July 4th to the 23rd, including Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. Visit Winona.com. This is the year to discover Winona's outdoors.
It's 19 minutes after 10 a.m., our first Thursday morning broadcast, or brunchcast, as I like to call it, here on Spectrum West. Well, we talked about a year ago to Mike Malone. He's a Wisconsin kid, is a talented jazz drummer, and his talent really caught my eye at the 2012 Eau Claire Jazz Festival. Today we're talking with Mike Malone because that talent has taken him to heights that he could not have predicted. He's living a dream come true at an early age and has taken a sabbatical from school as the new percussionist for the always popular, seemingly always touring, Glenn Miller Orchestra. Well, when we talked about a year ago, I know you were looking forward to whatever your interest in music and percussion presented, but did you believe that something like this would come along?
No, definitely not. I mean, a year ago, I figured I'd probably just still be in school right now.
Well, tell me how it all happened. I want to hear the story.
It was probably the middle of April, and I had gotten an email forwarded to me from the jazz director, Robert Baca, from the university.
Mm-hmm.
He's on a mailing list. When there's vacancies in this band, they send emails to a lot of universities and stuff so that they can get people auditioning from a really wide scope from around the country. So he gave me a heads up about the position being open. The next couple weeks, I recorded our Spring Jazz 1 concert, just put a video camera behind the drums, kind of looking down at me, and I sent them probably 4 or 5 tracks from that concert, uploaded them to YouTube and sent it to them, along with my resume and some other stuff like that. I think I waited for another 2.5 weeks, and I got a call that they wanted to offer me the position.
Wow. And so you've been on the road how long now?
I've been out with them 3 weeks.
Orientation, stuff like that, is always interesting when you join a new group. I remember when I had to play baseball with a varsity team the first time. They wanted to haze me a little bit and stuff. How's it been? How's the orientation been?
It's been fun. I mean, everyone out here is an amazing musician, and we're traveling a lot, and we're very busy. But they also are all so incredible with this band, and this band is very incredible. There's a lot of pressure to play well and, you know, kind of learn the ropes really quick. I've got a lot of advice, you know, quick things here and there to help me speed up the process along and me getting more comfortable playing with the band. But they've been really supportive and, you know, hard on me when they needed to be. But they're all really great guys, so that's mm-hmm. been nice.
Well, tell me about what was the first night like? Where was the first time you played with the Glenn Miller Orchestra?
My first night with them was way up in northern Michigan. I don't remember the exact city, but right at the tip of Michigan. We drove up like halfway the day before, mm-hmm. and then the next day we woke up and drove to the gig, and we did about a half hour to an hour sound check, where we ran over a little bit of the tunes. We also had a brand new vocalist coming in, female vocalist. So we had to really work to get her comfortable, since she's very exposed and everything. And then I had to play the gig. So it wasn't much of a rehearsal or anything to get settled, but it's pretty nerve-wracking, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I'll bet that first night was a bit scary. Or then again, maybe not, because you are a pretty well-prepared guy, and it's not like the music you're playing is foreign to you.
Yeah, I was definitely very well prepared from being, you know, at the university in Eau Claire and being familiar with the style and stuff, but they take it to a whole nother level. You know, everything is on a very, very small details and very intricate stuff that they do with the music. And I could never, before being in this band, I would have never imagined looking that deep into any of this music, but everyone knows every little thing about it.
Yeah, I mean, you've played Glenn Miller music many times before, but never like this, huh?
Yeah, I mean, played a lot of Glenn Miller music, but none of it with the Glenn Miller Orchestra.
What a perspective to have, huh? We're talking today with Mike Malone. He is a drummer, and until 3 weeks ago, he was attending the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, and now he's traveling with the Glenn Miller Orchestra. Yes, that Glenn Miller Orchestra. Are you, Mike, one of the youngsters in the group, or are there many others of your generation?
Well, I am the youngest one in the band right now.
Okay.
There's one other guy who's about just 4 or 5 months older than me, playing saxophone. And then there's definitely a handful of guys who are probably in their mid to late 20s. And then, you know, a few guys who have been here for decades.
You know, I'm guessing as you sit and talk with people that maybe the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and the jazz program is something that other people know something about. Is that true? Do people know of its existence?
Yeah, there are some people in this band who are familiar with it and know that it's a really great program. And this band has taken other players from our university before. So there's been a pianist, and then there were a handful of trumpet players in the 90s and such.
I read the drummer anchors a musical group like the one you're in. Is that true? Do you feel like an anchor?
Getting there.
Yeah?
The drummer definitely has a lot of responsibility because kind of the foundation for the rest of the band to play on top of. There's a lot of responsibility to play everything really well and with a high knowledge of the music and to kind of set everyone else up for how they're going to play.
I have notes in front of me, and when I was thinking about big band drumming, here's what I wrote. Big band drumming is some of the most creative or enjoyable for a drummer. It's so much a part of the score. It so often sets up the other instruments, and it fills in a lot of important spaces. Is that kind of a good way to say it?
Yeah, definitely.
You get to have some fun. Are you asked to follow charts meticulously, or are you given kind of a creative credit card to improvise once in a while?
I'm definitely given a creative boundary to explore and stuff, but there's also a lot of responsibility to play the music very historically true mm-hmm. and pure to the way it was performed in, you know, the 40s and the 50s. So I listen to a lot of the old recordings and try and emulate a little bit and then put my own flavor on it.
How about solos? Are you able to go nuts every once in a while?
Well, the solos are a whole other game. We do try and stay, you know, pure and historical, but that's kind of your time to shine, so they kind of gave us a little more liberty with the soloing.
So how did that go the first time you went off on your own?
I definitely didn't play loud enough for them, but it's been getting there and trying to be very clear and precise with everything I do.
I bet your drum kit is mic'd in a better way than it's ever been, huh?
Actually, they mostly play acoustic, so
they only
use 4 microphones for the whole show. One of them is on a piano, just because the piano acoustically isn't really loud enough in a lot of the big halls. And then one of them is for anybody who's soloing to go up and play in front of that microphone. The other two are for vocalists.
How about the drum set itself? Yeah, we want you to play your own kit, or have you been given like a whole brand new thing, or what are you playing?
I brought my own drum set, the same stuff I used in college and everything, and brought it to Chicago when I met up with the bus, been on the bus ever since.
Well, you've taken a sabbatical from your education, although you are pursuing one of a different nature right now. Does it feel that way to you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm learning a ton from being out here, and everyone out here is so experienced and well-knowledge that there's just no way I couldn't learn a ton.
Well, you've said from what I read that you are hoping to stick around with this experience for at least a couple years. What do you think the difference is going to be between Mike Malone going in and Mike Malone going out?
Well, hopefully I'll just have, you know, a whole range of experience to offer and bring back to whatever I do next. You know, finishing up at the University of Eau Claire and then pursuing other things after that, I'll just come in with a whole bunch of experience to offer and share with other people.
You want to teach, I read, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. On what kind of level?
Definitely teach privately with, you know, other drum set students. And then I really love teaching jazz in a ensemble setting, so like directing a big band or jazz ensemble.
It just makes me dizzy to read that you or the band plays 300 live dates a year. Are you prepared for that?
I guess so. I mean,
wow.
We're out here traveling, you know, 48 weeks out of the year, so playing 300 nights is nice because having a night off isn't as fun as a night playing.
This just came to my mind. What's the most surprising thing that has happened to you or that you've discovered since you got out on the road 3 weeks ago?
Probably just how intense this early music can be. You know, when we study at the university, a lot of jazz people focus on bebop, small group, you know, heavy improvised playing, and a bit different than the earlier big band music. And sometimes we look at that and think of it, you know, a little simpler or not as intense, but this music is very intense and difficult in its own way to be played properly. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll pretend I'm your parents now. Are you eating well? Are you taking care of yourself?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to eat well, especially since we're buying food. You know, you can always go to Subway as opposed to McDonald's.
Uh-huh. So we have a better physical picture of how it is you travel. How do you travel? What do you travel in?
We travel on a large coach bus that seats about 40 people. And since there's about 20 people in the band, we each kind of get a row. We get an overhead storage bin, like an airplane, and a different shelf, and room under the bus for our instruments.
Does 20 members compare to the original orchestra?
Yeah. So, you know, it's about 17 musicians, and then we have two different vocalists, a male and a female vocalist, and then a bus driver.
Mm-hmm. So do you have to play all dressed up? You got to wear a tux, or what do you have to do?
They have wardrobe that they supplied. We wear suits. We have a red jacket and a gray jacket. We all match when we perform.
Cool. Well, Mike Malone, applause on the accomplishment. Way to go, man. And I hope that as you trek across America and the world, that you keep us in the loop and remember us, as I'm sure you will, because the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire is a pretty warm spot in your heart, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, get back to work.
All right. Thanks. We'll talk to you later.
Mike Malone, nice guy, good guy. And good guys finish well. It'll be fun watching his career, won't it? It's 10:30, and this is Spectrum West, in its inaugural Thursday morning brunch cast. Spectrum Memo, Tuesday Night Blues from the Chippewa Valley Blues Society, presents Deepwater Reunion next Tuesday the 16th, Owen Park Bandshell, Eau Claire. Volume 1 presents the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series at Phoenix Park in downtown Eau Claire tonight. It's Fragile, good friends of Spectrum West. The Sliced Bread Jug Band and Voodoo's Dream, First Notes, scheduled to drift across the confluence at about 6:30 today. Again, this summer, the Chill on the Hill Summer Concert Series at UW River Falls happens. 7 p.m. next Tuesday, July 16th, it's Jack Clatt and the Cat Swingers, a Western swing band. That's at the Melvin Wall Amphitheater. I'm Al Ross. It's so nice to have you along on Spectrum West this morning. If the request is take me out to the ball game, well, Jim Oliver is here to do just that. In fact, his guest can take you to over 50 years of ball games in a town that at one time was, and maybe still is, well known for its baseball dexterity.
Spread out in the outfield. If a grenade goes off, we'll lose all of you. Butts down, mouths shut, gloves in the dirt. These are just two of the saintisms found in Play Ball, the Saints' 55 years in Eau Claire baseball. The saintisms are just a small part of a book written by Glenn St. Arnold, a prominent figure in baseball at many levels over the years in Eau Claire. The saint, Glenn St. Arnold, joins us to talk about his book and about Eau Claire baseball over the past 55 years. So welcome to Spectrum West.
Oh, thank you very much, Jim.
Well, you know, the title of the book says 55 years, but I wonder if you weren't involved in baseball longer than that.
Well, we go all the way back to 1952 when Little League started here in Eau Claire, and I missed Little League by 2 years, but certainly knew all the kids and attended quite a few of the ball games.
Well, you started managing when you were 15.
We took the playground kids that hadn't made Little League, and we called ourselves the East Side Sewer Rats and had a record of 12-4. But the league started with the Parks and Rec. They had six teams with different areas in town. That's one of the things I think that's missing this day and age. The city had playgrounds at all sorts of different areas. The kids just kind of flocked there from their side of town. That proved to be real good. Our youngest child was 7 years old. That was Dave Robertson and Jim Engelbritson. All the way up to 12 years of age, we had nine, and that was it. We had enough for a ball club, and we played throughout the city. At that time, they'd give you bus tokens to go to the different playgrounds, and one token going, one token coming back. So we didn't have to use our bikes or anything. It was a lot of fun, and it went very well.
Now, were you a player manager, or did you just manage?
I just managed. Oh. Our player manager, who still is a great personal friend, was John Nicolai, and he played the outfield and helped me coach the team. It was an adventure, but it was a start.
Now, did you move up then to Babe Ruth ball from there? Or?
No, I didn't. Moved into Little League in 1957 for the two or three years. Didn't do anything. Grew up as a teenager in the 50s. Mm-hmm. But in 57, we took the Outdoor Sports Shop Yankees, a Little League team. 58 and 59, I also was in Little League. And then moved to Babe Ruth in 1960. Uh-huh. Our record was always about 500, but we always had a team that fundamentally was pretty good. All the other coaches didn't want to play us too much because we'd bunt and hit and run and just play good sound baseball.
Sounds like it was fun baseball to watch.
Yes, it was. And the kids had a good time, and that's the name of the game even today. You got to have fun playing baseball.
Absolutely. Then you were involved in American Legion ball.
Yes, I was. The Legion team came 1965 to 1970, and then the Eau Claire Cavaliers from 71 to 78.
Cavaliers, of course, one of the storied organizations in Eau Claire. Talk a little bit about your involvement with them.
Well, Dick Gannon and I were two of the five, and the other three people that just thought a better brand of baseball should be played here were Raj Bolig and Pete Koppel's dad, Gene Koppel, and Big Joe McCauley, who owned Big Joe's Pizza Parlor. And we five were the formation of the Eau Claire Cavaliers. It kind of came from two state championships for American Legion in 69 and 70. Kind of worked its way into the hearts of Eau Claire people. Eau Claire had been out of baseball since 1962 when the Eau Claire Braves pulled the cork and left town. So it was well received the first 4 or 5 years. We drew anywhere from 30,000 to 45,000. Mm. It was well received by people.
He is Glenn St. Arnold, who's written the book Play Ball, The Saints' 55 Years in Eau Claire Baseball. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the Cavaliers. There must have been some kind of a fundraiser or a seed money or something that came to start an organization like that.
Well, Dick Gannon kind of backed us. Dick was vice president down at First Wisconsin Bank at that time. He underwrote the start of the Cavaliers, at least uniform-wise. Mm-hmm. Got his money back, of course. We had a couple tag days. You know, you need baseballs and, mm-hmm. and bats and catching equipment. We did have some of that. Some of the kids have their own stuff, but it was a challenge. We were real, real happy with, you know, with the outcome. Here we are 43 years later, and you can't look into the future, but it would take a long time before somebody's going to catch us.
Mm-hmm. You've been through a lot of players. I made the comment earlier to you that anybody who ever played baseball in Eau Claire, when they look at your book, they'll either find their name and maybe even find their picture in there. What about major league players? A couple of guys made it to the majors from here, didn't they?
Yes. Rick Hentz, who I didn't coach but was a fine, fine athlete and an outfielder, he made it to the major leagues with the Washington Senators. Didn't stay real long, had a lot of ability, but, you know, you got to be at the right place at the right time. The other gentleman that did a great job was Tom Poquette. Tom played for me on the 69 Legion team and came off a fine high school career in both football, basketball, and baseball. Tom was primarily a pitcher and an infielder for Memorial High School. I was one of the first ones that moved him to the outfield. I just thought Tom was a little over-aggressive in the infield. Very good. But I put him in the outfield, and it ended up a good move. Tom got signed by the Kansas City Royals. Wasn't with us in 1970. He was legal because his birthday was October 30th, but he signed a contract even before our Legion season started in 70. In 69, we were fortunate to win the state tournament at Wausau, and in 1970, we won the state tournament again here in Eau Claire. I think we'd even been better, of course, with Tom, but it turned out well for him because he had about 12 years in the major leagues, and then he coached, I think, a half a dozen years at least, and maybe more. He was a real good personal friend of George Brett's. George Brett had a team in one of the leagues, and Tom managed the team for him for two or three years. But that's the only pro ball player we've had come out of Eau Claire since 1952.
Well, when did you start working on this book?
I started about 4 years ago. Judy and I, my wife of 48 years, go down to Florida in February and March. People would say, geez, Glenn, you've been, you know, around so long, you should write a book. Okay, yeah, it sounded good, but we got serious about 4 years ago, and I'd take all the clippings and everything that I have. A lot of it is in the book, but we've got them on file at home. So we started out, and I started at the beginning and just kept progressing. I did it all in longhand, wrote it all out, brought it back, and Frank Smoot at the museum has been just super helpful and a great guy, a great historian for the museum. He typed everything, and we proofed it two or three or four times, and all of a sudden, the book was ready here in 2013, just about baseball season, mm-hmm. which worked out very, very well.
So where can we buy the book?
Thank you much. The book, Jim, is available at Volume 1, downtown Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley Museum. Books are available at the museum. I've got two more signings coming up. I've already had two, and they went well, at the Chippewa Valley Museum, Tuesday, July 23rd, and Tuesday, July 30th, from 4 to 7. Pine Meadow Golf Club. And books are available at the Mount Simon Babe Ruth concession stand. And they certainly can call my home, 715-834-3597, and we'll find them and get them a book. They have gone very, very well. I appreciate the community's backing of the book. Hopefully, it can go on. I'm not going to be a superb author or anything, but the book has been well received, and anybody 74 years of age, which I am, or down, is going to correlate with something in there.
Well, the book is Play Ball, The Saints' 55 Years in Eau Claire Baseball. And it's a wonderful resource. If you're interested in what's been going on in Eau Claire baseball for the last 55 years, you'll probably find it in there. As I said before, if you ever played baseball in Eau Claire during those 55 years, you're probably going to find your name there and maybe even find your picture if your team was successful at anything. Well, Glenn St. Arnold, thanks so much for being with us, and best wishes with the book.
Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate the time.
And thank you, guys. The book is also available at all home Cavalier games. They play tonight at 6 o'clock at Carson Park, and after a road trip, they'll be back in town for a weekend series beginning a week from today, and Glenn will gladly sign the 160-page journal at those games. This is Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from Ken Vance Audi, featuring the restyled 2013 Audi A4. Equipped with Audi Connect, online Google-enhanced navigation, access to local information, and Wi-Fi. KenVance.com.
Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering the Wisconsin mobile app in Android, iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch for checking balances, paying bills, and more. Mobile banking demo, app, and details at wisconsincu.org.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present The Elves and the Shoemaker through Tuesday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The Saga of the Prospector's Daughter, or She Was Only a Miner's Miner, plays through Saturday at the Eau Claire Children's Theater's Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. The Great River Road Theater is presenting The King and I through July 21st in the Prescott City Park. The Producers runs through August 4th at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Northern Star Theater Company of Rice Lake is presenting The Bikinis through July 21st. And Annie is on stage at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake through July 20th. Bingo the Musical is playing at Fanny Hildiner Theater in Eau Claire. The show runs through August 25th. Crazy for You and The Foreigner are playing at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Crazy for You will run through August 18th. The Foreigner will run through August 25th. William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, King Henry V, and Macbeth are playing in repertory through August 3rd at the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona. Peter Pan and Tink will play for groups through August 2nd at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. And the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson is playing Always Patsy Cline. The show will run through August 10th. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Spectrum MO, this summer series, it's called the Summer Sound Series, actually. Concert series at UW Eau Claire welcomes Christopher Wilson on marimba Sunday afternoon at 2 in Phillips Recital Hall. Hey, by the way, this afternoon at 1 o'clock, replicas of Columbus ships the Pinta and the Nina arrive in Lake City, Minnesota. And we're talking on Thursday, of course. They'll be open to the general public as of Friday and will be docked at the Lake City Marina until next Wednesday, the 17th. In Ladysmith, the Music in the Park Summer Series is underway. Danville will be appearing. Bring a lawn chair to Memorial Park in Ladysmith Thursday evenings at 6. It's sponsored by the Rusk Area Arts Alliance and the Greater Ladysmith Area Chamber of Commerce. Well, we've already felt some of the excitement of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair now in its annual run in Chippewa Falls. Last night, you may have seen or heard the Oak Ridge Boys on the main stage, or had the Intimidator hot dog, or tested your mettle on the rides and games in the Midway, or visited the animal barns and the exhibit halls, or maybe all of the above. Or maybe that's all still ahead for you and your family during the fair's run through Sunday. What do you say we learn as much as we can about backstage at the Northern Wisconsin State Fair from its executive director, Rusty Volk, whom I visited last week at a much quieter Fairgrounds.
What building are we sitting in?
Actually, Al, we're sitting in the Fine Arts Building.
Okay. You and I are recording this about a week before the beginning of the fair. First of all, I wanted to say that producers nationwide pay big money to have the effect that you and I are getting while we talk right now. This echo and this reverby sounding thing. We should do some recording in here some other time.
It's cool. We should, because that's part of the experience. To come to the fairgrounds earlier in these large exhibit buildings, you get a real ambiance of what's going on. It's quite open. There's a lot of room, and quite frankly, we have a little city that basically lives on this fairgrounds. We probably have 150 to 200 people that will be living on the fairgrounds throughout the entire week.
Wow.
So it's quite a production. It takes a lot of staff, and it takes a lot of volunteers to really create this entire Northern Wisconsin State Fair. It's fun.
As I said, when we were coming out of your office and we, opened and closed and heard the sound of the wood screen door, it made me feel like I was back at camp.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Let's talk about Rusty Volk. You were telling me that you hailed from North Dakota and you were a farmer at one time, and I'm thinking that fits fairs really well.
Absolutely. I'm very blessed that my current position as the executive director of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair fills all my life experiences that I've had thus far. I grew up on my dad's farm along with 11 other siblings. And I went back, actually, after graduating from St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota, to farm with my dad. I married a gal from St. Paul and moved back. Got involved with a lot of the organizations, as it is in a small town. Actually, my wife and I were voted the outstanding young farm couple in North Dakota for the Farmers Union, and we represented the state of North Dakota in that capacity for some of our innovative practices that we started with artificial insemination of cows. I was actually the local veterinarian because the nearest vet was 35 miles away. So I have a lot of background in the agricultural sector as well as the animal husbandry portion of that whole spectrum.
Okay, and so you trekked east then and you ended up in Wisconsin?
I did. I moved to Wisconsin in 1985. Mm-hmm. In 2007, the fairgrounds were up for sale. The fairgrounds were always privately owned. The local community decided that they could not let this venue go into unknown development, that they needed to keep this venue as a fairgrounds entity for the nonprofits that utilize it, for Oktoberfest that uses it, and for the future. In 2007, then, a campaign was conducted, and benefactors, businesses, foundations, everybody pitched in some monies, and they generated enough money to purchase the fairgrounds. With that purchase, they put together a nonprofit organization to operate and conduct the business of operating the fairgrounds. So that company is called the Northern Wisconsin State Fair Association. And in the fall of 2008, I was asked to consider being the executive director of that nonprofit organization. So we have a 9-man or person volunteer board of directors that looks at the various grounds and facilities to determine what we're going to do with the venue. Our first order of business was to do a strategic plan. And we brought together some 45 people in our community to make decisions as to what we're going to do with these grounds, who's going to use it, and how do we move forward. We currently have a 25-year facilities plan of action, and that has aided our development and our rebuilding of the fairgrounds as we go forward. So our first order of business after that was to come up with a facilities plan. Which buildings do we keep? Which ones cannot be used? We're 5 years into it now, and we've got 20 years yet to rebuild the grounds, which will consist of a community center. We have a new grandstand designed for the fairgrounds. We have a new coliseum designed, as well as an equestrian center. Items that our benefactors and those people that are very passionate about these grounds determine that we need to have for the community. So we're working at that. We started 2 years ago with our infrastructure. We replaced the entire electrical grid It was in the 1940s is when some of this stuff was put together, and it just needed replacing. So we've replaced almost every light in the buildings with up-to-date technologies. We have Wi-Fi on the campus.
You do.
We're working with the local universities, with Chippewa Valley Technical College, UW-Stout, UW-Eau Claire, UW-River Falls, to utilize these grounds even as an education center for their needs. So we're reaching out to the community, Al.
We're talking with Rusty Volk. He is the executive director of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair Association. In your last piece about the vision and the strategic plan, you did use the word old, and I'm thinking there are a number of people, if not all the people, who are saying, you know, part of the charm of this campus is the age of some of the buildings. And so I'm sure the historic factor is something that everybody's taking into account and saying, yeah, we got to keep that building.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Any development or building construction that's going to be done on the grounds, it's going to encapsulate and encompass that same feel that we have currently at the fairgrounds. If you look at the Coliseum, the big red barn that was built in 1880, you know, that's been there a long time. It's majestic. It's served so many people. Any buildings that come will have to look like that. Mm-hmm. And if we can't save that, we will save that building. So, yes, ambiance and the history of this fairgrounds are just fabulous. Mm-hmm. So anything that we build is going to look that way, with the cupolas on top and the flags on top of the buildings.
I was just going to mention that. There was one time when I was here at the fair, and I think I walked past that large red building that you were talking about. As I looked in, it was not only active on floor level, but I looked up, and of course, the sun rays were coming through those upper windows, and I'm telling you, I was back to every year that they've had an event here.
Absolutely, Al. The natural lighting that's in those buildings with the windows up above are just great. We have a hog barn down there built the same way, where it's natural airflow so that the heat escapes. So that's the coolest building for the animals. Why are we spending money on air conditioning or fans if we can let nature do it on its own? It's actually part of our entire sustainability plan, because we're looking at what are the sustainable energies can we use where we don't have to use electricity. So when you came out of that screen door, Al, and you said it's like a camp, it needs to stay that way.
It does.
Because that's part of the feel of the fairgrounds, and that's what brings people back.
Good for you guys. All right, so now, when this conversation airs, as I said, the fair is in full swing, but let's give people a perspective of what it took to get that fair into full swing. What's going on now, and what goes on during the year to keep this fair going? Because you have to schedule lots of stuff.
Lots of stuff. We basically are planning for the 2014 fair right now. At this time, it's just minor details that we have to make sure people are on schedule. The grounds need to be prepped with weather. That's a constant changing effect. And then to make sure the grounds are very appealing and safe for the vendors and for the people that come here. As you know, our entire populace is growing older.
Except you and me.
Except you and me. There you go. We're always old as we feel, right? So we always have to look at what's the next generation. How do we bring them in, and then how do we retain those fair people that have gone to the fair year after year after year so that they can come back and enjoy it? I walk the grounds looking for trip hazards, making sure wheelchairs and strollers can go wherever they can go so they can really meet the needs, as well as the safety aspect. As a member of the Wisconsin Association of Fairs at the state level, we look at how the public walks through barns and how we can direct that public, shall we say, away from potential hazards. What we're finding is that animals get sick because of humans being sick. So when you start looking at that, we need to be proactive in washing hands. You will see lots more hand-washing stations throughout the grounds with hopes that you see it through all fairs, because it's a sanitation thing. I'm a recent graduate from the Institute of Fair Management. We go through 32 different aspects, from human resources to management of buildings, facilities, crowd control, where's our emergency evacuation plan. You're working with the local sheriff's department and the fire department, making sure that you have egress Last year, we had 20,000 people that attended the fair on Saturday alone. In the background, as the manager, I look at, okay, if this area is blocked, I need to make sure I have a path for emergency personnel that may have to come in.
So many people equate fairs with the baubles and the bangles and the beads and the lights and the bling and all that stuff. But the livestock and people's ability, especially young people's ability to show their stuff, is really the backbone of fairs, isn't it?
Absolutely. Without the agricultural aspect, there would be no fair. It would only be another carnival. It would only be another attraction. That aspect, a competitive aspect, for the youth and for adults to show their animals and to show how they can compete with one another. A good example is really the goats. Okay, goat milking, goat cheese. You see more goats around than ever before. Llamas, you know, alpacas. What's important for the fair is that they show and be judged, because that determines basically that quality of goat. How you can breed it. How are you going to take the sire and breed it to the next to improve your herd? That's what the fair is about. Judging it to say, okay, yes, everybody agrees this goat is better than this one. So consequently, the next year, everybody's going to want to get that better goat bloodline in order so they could produce more milk or to produce more wool or dairy cattle to produce more beef. And when you look at the youth programs with the 4-H and the FFA throughout the school systems and throughout the extension office, that's what they're all about. I really love it when I can see a child showing a sow, a lamb, or beef, and be able to tell the public, this is what this animal costs, this is how much food it eats, this is what the cost of the food is, this is the market price. So when you go to the store and you buy that steak, whatever you're buying, you can realize, you know, I'm getting a real bargain. The fair is a blending of ideas for the betterment of tomorrow.
And I'm ashamed, Rusty, that I haven't brought it up yet, but how about the food? I mean, you don't go to a fair and not eat.
We always have a wonderful lineup. Fair food is all about throwing the diet out the book.
That's right.
And enjoying life.
Thanks, Rusty Volk. Everything you need to know is at NorthernWisconsinStateFair.com. It's NorthernWiStateFair.com. Spectrum Memo, the summer events music program from UW Eau Claire, features a performance by the Sue Orfield Band, 7 p.m. Monday, Owen Park Band Shill. Chill on the Hill, Heidi Center, Chippewa Falls, next Tuesday, 11 a.m. It's Jerry Way, all about the guitar. Don't forget Power Ballads, Saturday night at the Mabel Tainter. It's the ultimate 80s experience in Menominee. Well, thanks for being part of the Spectrum West experience. We'll be here every Thursday morning following the news at 10. You can hear a reprise each Friday evening at 7 on 89.7 and 90.7 of WPR's News and Classical Music Network. For now, thanks to Hillary Crusan, Tiffany Coggins for promotional and production support, to Jim Oliver for his valuable participation, and again to you, the spirit you display in the arts. I'm Al Ross. We'll see you next week.